Good morning, everybody. Y'all kind of getting robbed this morning. Dad decided to go over to Lee DeWitt's church, and now you get stuck with me. Say it all the time, but I desire your prayers. I couldn't stand up here and teach anything about John 3:16 without the Lord's help. I've heard it said all my life, and there's a few times that God's come through and showed it to me, that if the Spirit reveals something to you, you know it's the truth. And that's what I'll stand on my whole life, is what the Spirit has revealed to me. So when it comes to teaching Sunday school, it really doesn't matter what I stand up here and say. It matters what the Spirit reveals to you. So, Lord willing, His Spirit will be in the lesson this morning, and we'll be able to share something. But the lesson this morning is in Exodus chapter 15, and it kind of jumps through the chapter, verses 1 through 3, 11 through 13, 17 and 18, and 20 and 21. I don't know whose idea it was to set it up that way, but that's the way they did it. this lesson comes right after the Israelites crossed the Red Sea. If you go back to chapter 14, it tells the story about God's parting the waters and Israel walking through on dry ground. If you go back into 14, if I look at verse 19, it says, "And the angel of God, which went before the camp of Israel, removed and went behind them, and the pillar of the cloud went from before their face and stood behind them. And it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel, and it was a cloud of darkness to them, but it gave light by night to these, so that the one came not near the other all night." Now this happened in the middle of the Red Sea. This was after the waters parted, and they were walking through on dry ground. And if you remember the story, Israel was standing on the bank of the Red Sea, and I believe they had a mountain on one side and a mountain on the other side, and the Egyptians coming behind them. So they thought there was nowhere to go. And God parted the sea, and they went off in there into the sea on dry ground. This wasn't a river that they could cross in an hour or two. This was a sea. God parted the Red Sea. It was miles and miles and miles before they got out from between them walls of water. The Egyptians coming behind them had horses and chariots. They was catching up in between the walls of water. The Egyptians was catching up with them. But God kept them apart. Verse 21 says, "And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night, and the waters were divided." Look on down to 26. It says, "And the Lord said unto Moses, stretch out thine hand over the sea, that the waters may come again over the Egyptians, upon their chariots and upon their horsemen. And Moses stretched forth his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to his strength when the morning appeared, and the Egyptians fled against it, and the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea." He had the waters come back together over top of the Egyptians. I don't know if I had ever really thought about that, But God set it up that way so that the Egyptians could no longer ever come after his people. The entire Egyptian army was destroyed in the middle of the Red Sea. And that's where we come into our lesson in chapter 15. It says, "Then sang Moses and the children of Israel this song unto the Lord, and spake, saying, I will sing unto the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider hath he thrown into the sea." I was telling my wife that this whole lesson was a song, and I didn't know how I was going to be able to teach a song. And she said, "Well, you're going to sing it?" I don't know how they sung this kind of stuff. But my thought was, and I was telling somebody the other day, I can look back on my life, and there's a few people here and there. One that I can think of right off the top of my head is Elmer Harp, that I didn't get to be around a whole lot, but I can remember even as a real young Christian, when he'd get up and sing, the Spirit just overflow everybody. It was just real good. And to me, in my memory, it seems like it was every single time he got up and sung, it just lifted me right up and filled me up. If you look back in the Old Testament, there's a lot of places, and the first one that comes to my mind is Passover. There's a lot of places in the Old Testament where that something significant happened, and God told them, prepare a feast and do this every year at this time as a commemorative to what I've done for you. This song, I believe Moses sang this song to commemorate what God had just done for him, brought him out of Egypt. And more than that, parted the waters of the sea so they could come out into the promised land. I don't know much about the history of all this, but I know when they come out of the Red Sea, they spent a long time in the wilderness, and probably nobody that was alive when they came out of the Red Sea was still alive when they went into the Promised Land. That may be wrong. There might have been some young ones that came with them that was still alive then, but the point is, there's probably none of them that knew this song the first time they sang it that was still singing it when they went into the Promised Land all them years later. But I do believe that the song Moses sang on this day right here that we're reading about, I believe they still knew that song. I believe they was passing that song down. We've got a lot of songs that we sing in church now that people sung 50 years ago when I was a little kid. And they're good songs, and they've got a good meaning to them. We sing them because we feel like God's put it on our heart to sing them. But a lot of times when I'm at work or driving down the road or wherever I'm at, I'll have one of them old songs come on my mind, and I'll just start singing it, and God will bless me just with the memory of the person that I remember singing it. or the memory of what maybe something happened in a church service that song brings back to mind. But we'll go on ahead and read some of this. It says, "The Lord is my strength and song, and he has become my salvation. He is my God, and I will prepare him an habitation, my Father's God, and I will exalt him." My Father's God. Just because God is my dad's God didn't make me okay. We can go back to go to where the children of Israel said, "We've got Abraham as our father." You know, I've jokingly said, "I've got Siegel Newport as my family, Grandpa. You know, I got pretty good bloodline there." I guess I'm biased a little bit, but in the long run, it don't mean nothing to my salvation. Who I'm related to or who I'm not related to. Everybody that's ever been born has the same right to heaven, which is none, and the same opportunity to get there, which is Jesus going to the cross and dying for us. But God gave me an opportunity one time, and he also gave me the ability to get off the front bench and come to him. Because even, I didn't even have the ability to stand up and walk to get to him. But he made it possible. Just like with these people, he's parted the waters and made it possible for them to get where he wanted them to go. It says, "The Lord is a man of war. The Lord is his name." I was reading reading in this Sunday school book they give us, and let's see if I can find it right quick. Well, I can't find it, but anyway, it was saying that the Lord, the word Lord translated from the old Hebrew into English, that was the word that they could think of that kind of matched up with what the Hebrew Bible said, and it was just the only word they could think of that represented a great authority. The greatest authority there was. I don't remember exactly how it said it, but Lord was the word they used to represent the all-powerful. Then it jumps down to verse 11. It says, "Who is like unto thee, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like thee, glorious in holiness, fearful in praises, doing wonders?" He said, "Who is like thee among the gods?" The Egyptians had a whole bunch of gods, but they didn't. That didn't save them when they messed with the wrong god. The Egyptians, well, all the people in those times and even farther on, had a lot of different gods. Even as far up as Native Americans had a lot of different gods. Uh, for some reason, they felt like they needed to have a God for each instance. I guess they just couldn't imagine one God being big enough to take care of everything. And when they ran into that one God that was big enough, their gods weren't gods anymore. They were just statues made of wood and stone. And they came down. It says, "Who is like thee, glorious in holiness, fearful in praises, doing wonders? Thou stretched out thy right hand, the earth swallowed them. Thou in thy mercy hast led forth the people which thou hast redeemed. Thou hast guided them in thy strength unto thy holy habitation." God told Moses to take these people and lead them out of Egypt and into the promised land. He never said it was going to be easy. And I believe when Moses told him, "I can't," God said, well, let me back up. Moses had a stuttering problem, and when he said, "I can't," he was talking about he couldn't go talk to Pharaoh because he couldn't talk eloquently. And God said, "Don't you think I can fix that? I made your mouth. I can make it work right." Well, instead of making it work right, he gave him Aaron to talk for him. But the point is, everything God wanted Moses to do, he made a way for it to happen. And everything he's ever asked me to do, there's been a way for it to happen. God has never pointed me in a direction that I couldn't go. He's always had a way somehow, even though when he first sent me somewhere, I might not see the way, but there's always been a way for me to do what God asked me to do. Anybody got any comments? Yeah, it's hard for us to, the Bible says God's ways are higher than ours. It's hard for us to understand. For the purpose of life in general, I like to kind of dwell on the fact that I've been saved and nothing in this world matters anymore. There's a lot of stuff in this world that I love. There's a lot of people I love. But in the big picture, in God's picture, nothing in this world matters except getting my people saved. Because I'm going home one of these days. And this life will be forgotten. It'll be gone. Nothing that I've ever had or ever will have will go with me. The only ones that will go with me is the ones that are saved. And if I want my people to go with me to heaven, I've got to live for the Lord and show them the way. And that's the only thing in this life that matters. Now, we've all got to go to work, and we've got to pay the bills, and we've got to, you know, do the things in life that we've got to do. But when it comes right down to it, if something gets missed because I'm on a mission for God, I'll say it that way, that's okay. Because if I can show my people that God is more important than anything in this world, I believe I've hit the mark. But sometimes that's real hard for us to understand. It's just the idea that what we've got in this life and what we're living for in this life doesn't mean anything in the big picture. It jumps down to verse 17 and 18. It says, "Thou shalt bring them in and plant them in the mountain of thine inheritance, in the place, O Lord, which thou hast made for thee to dwell in the sanctuary, O Lord, which thy hands have established. The Lord shall reign forever and ever." I believe Moses was looking forward to the promised land and building that temple, and which he never got to do, by the way. But he knew what was coming because God had already showed him where things were headed. I believe them two verses right there, he was looking forward to that place where his people could be God's people and be comfortable and have a sanctuary. Any thoughts on that? I was almost kind of hoping I wouldn't have time to get to this last part. Verse 20 and 21 says, "And Miriam the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took a timbrel in her hand, and all the women went out after her with timbrels and with dances." Now, a timbrel, from what I understand, was pretty much the same thing as a tambourine. And they went out, her and the women went out singing and dancing. We don't really do a whole lot of dancing here at this church, but I know there are some that do. And it's not my place to judge whether they're right or wrong. It's just different. But I will say this, I can remember being a little kid and my grandma Newport didn't get to come to church very much, but when she did, there was times she'd get filled up and she'd come up the aisle over there on the side and high stepping like she was doing some kind of old Indian dance or something, and just shouting and praising God, and to me she was dancing, and there's nothing wrong with that. If God tells you that's what to do, then that's what to do. Like I say, we don't do a whole lot of dancing around here, but when somebody does, the Spirit sure is in it. These women come out singing and dancing, and it says, "And Miriam answered them, Sing ye to the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider hath he thrown into the sea." She started right back up where Moses started at the beginning of the song. One of the thoughts in the commentary was that maybe it was a case where Moses sung a line and the women sung it back to him. I don't know if that's the case or not, but it could just well be that Moses got to the end of the song and she just decided that it was a good song. She was going to sing it again. I don't know. But I think the song, the purpose of the whole song was to commemorate what God had done for him. And I've already said it, but there's a lot of songs that I can remember from being a young Christian that still years later helped me in some way or another. They helped me to remember something that happened, or most likely just when I'm having a rough time and God puts a song in my head and I sing it. I could be at work having the worst day of my life and start singing one of them songs and just get filled up and everything else goes away. You know, it goes right back to me talking about the only thing that's important is serving God. I can be having the worst day of my life and God come through and make everything okay. Even though nothing changed. The job didn't change. The mess didn't change. The behavior of other people didn't change. But God changes me and the way I look at it, and all of a sudden everything is okay. And that's worth everything. Anybody got anything? I believe I'm about out. So if nobody's got anything, we'll say thank you for your prayers. I reckon Dad will be back next week, I think. Is he? That ain't good.